This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. Let me turn that off, turn this off. It's been a good week. Got things done. I did finish up part one of the costume for Blame It on Someone Else Day. So I've got that. I can just go with that tomorrow. That'll be fine. I actually have a part two that I was thinking about trying to do this evening. We'll see. I'm getting home. I'll get home late is the only problem. Because I dropped off at the church to see if they needed some help. And in the process of helping them, I was helping my son-in-law update an Android tablet and get a non-approved application put on the tablet, etc., 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 a few things like that. But we eventually got that all done. Team effort. My son-in-law and then our music minister as well. We got that done. Yay! So I'm actually heading home about an hour later than I intended. We'll see how much time all of this takes. All is well. All is well. Costumes are going good. I think I wouldn't know what I'm doing for Halloween. So, ordered some stuff for that today. We'll see if that comes in, see how that looks. So, that's good. Writing is going well. I have a few more words to write tonight. I may just skip those because it's only like 189 words or so. So I'll just see what the time looks like. I'll get home, upload the podcast, maybe do some quick words, and then get upstairs and try to get part two done of the costume. So we'll see. We did have the life celebration for Chris Hill this week, and that was lovely. They, of course, streamed it, but they had it at a church called James River. It's their West Campus. They had it. And it was very, very nice. It was very nice. Celebrated his life, celebrated his humor and his kindness. And so it was good. It was good. Still sad. Still unnecessary, but good. The Lord works in all things, and there is beauty in everything. So that's all good. Like I said, work was good. All is well there. Excuse me. I'm long on time. I'm normally home by this point, and I've had something to eat. I haven't had anything yet to eat since Tuesday night, and I've been kind of up a little later working on costume. But we're going to make it. We're going to make it. Anyways, I had downloaded an article, mainly because of the title. And I looked at it and I was like, yep. As it turns out, the article, as I was reading through it after I had made some notes, I was looking at it and going, yeah, okay, well, this is kind of interesting, but it was really more the title of the article that I was interested in. The title of the article was "The Delta Variant Has Warped Our Risk Perception." And they start off by saying, "Gone are the easy, thoughtless choices of summer. Making decisions that balance safety and sanity just got a lot more complicated." And the sad part here is I don't think these decisions actually need to be that much more complicated. But the fact is, there are lots of agendas out there and lots of people trying to prove their agendas by quoting a lot of statistics that are skewed simply because of the way the data is presented. And I hope I am not doing any of that either, and intentionally or unintentionally, but there's always a risk. There's always a risk of that. So this article was talking about the fact that your chance of being crushed in bed tonight by a falling satellite is minuscule, but it's also non-zero. So Ronald Howard, a Stanford engineering professor and founder of a discipline called decision analysis, made a point of noting the latter, the risk of splat. So, okay, there are a lot of things in life that the risk is non-zero. It could happen. And when you're approaching risk, people have two basic ways of doing things. One way is to say, well, it could happen, so I'm gonna have to go out and make sure that I'm doing everything I can to prepare myself just in case that happens. That's one way to do it. And the other one is to say, what are you talking about? There are so many things that could happen, you can't even function. You can't even function if you do that. You just need to understand what risk and blah, 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 blah. So part of this whole thing with are you going to get vaccinated, are you not going to get vaccinated, has to do with evaluation of risk. For instance, I mentioned on the podcast that when they tell you that the vaccine is 95% effective, that number that they're using there is called the experimental efficacy rate, the EER. And in fact, in times past, the EER was only used for analysis. It was not actually the number that was given to the public because it's a bit deceptive. Because it doesn't factor in a control group. All it factors in is the experimental group. So for instance, if you have an experimental group of 100 people and you have a control group of 100 people, you give the vaccine to the 100 people in the experimental group and then you see how many of them catch COVID. And in the case of a 95% EER, an experimental efficacy rate, you would have 5 people in the 100 group of people who got the vaccine who contracted COVID. So you'd say, oh, that's the 95%. But that doesn't tell you what your chances are of getting COVID if you get the vaccine. Because the assumption with that is that all 100 people in the experimental group had the same chance of getting COVID and would have gotten COVID if they didn't get the vaccine. And that is not true. That's why you have a control group. So if you have a control group, and in that control group, 5 of those people get COVID, and in the experimental group, 95% of those people don't get COVID, then you have to take those two percentages and I think you multiply them together. And I've heard several people say this, that actually the absolute efficacy rate, which is what you get when you factor in the actual control group for the vaccines, is all either 1% or sub 1%. So, in other words, if we were people who paid attention to statistics, if we were people who were approaching this rationally and weren't being given numbers that were cooked, what we would have been told is that if you get the vaccine, it improves your chances of not getting COVID by 1%. That's the truth. Now, with Delta variant, that may alter a little bit. Because with Delta variant, it's more contagious, so that would increase your chances of getting COVID. So then the vaccine would then possibly reduce those chances more, except for the fact that apparently COVID is, Delta variant is very good at getting around the vaccines. comparatively speaking. I think the latest thing that I saw on Pfizer was like, it's only 45% effective, down from 95, and that the Moderna is like at 75% effective. I mean, it's not the quote-unquote 95% effective, but then again, it never was the 95% effective. If you're talking about an absolute rate, it was more like 1%. You know, everybody running around saying, you gotta get the vaccine, you gotta get the vaccine. Well, okay. All those numbers are skewed. So in this article, they talked about the fact that there was an application that had been written. I think it's like a cell phone application. That kind of helped people figure out, you know, what was your risk and that sort of thing. Last winter, the author of this article goes through a bunch of different stuff and their risk ratios and rewards and blah, 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 goes through all that. So, and the author of the article says, last winter, during a similar moment of rising case numbers and before widespread vaccination, I wrote about a project called Micro... Just a second. Let me get in here. Shut this off, and then I'll turn this on. There we go. I wrote a project called MicroCOVID, an online tool built by a group of six roommates in San Francisco that calculated the risk of viral exposure. They called their mission district home Ibashho, a reference to Ada Palmer's sci-fi novel, To Like the Lightning. The point was that they had all things they wanted to do amidst the pandemic. Independent lives with partners to see, protests to attend, workplaces to be. But the nature of the virus is that anyone's behavior is also a threat to one's roommates. Different desires, shared risks. So they decided to budget their potential viral exposure. Together, they agreed upon what was reasonable. And then they each lived their lives in a way that was consistent with that agreement. Freedom within limits. Okay, so they figure out a way to, you know, calculate all these kind of things and blah, 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 micro COVID and, you know, they've, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So great. So they would punch their numbers into this thing and then determine, okay, so yeah, you're going to go out and you're going to go here and here. And so the chances of you contracting is here and here and blah, 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 blah. And the problem is that Delta variant has come along and just blown all that stuff out of the water. It's just blown it all out of the water for them because Delta variant spreads faster. But what is completely unhelpful in all of this is when people who should know better are doing articles like one I heard Ben Shapiro talk about, that were trying to determine the risk of children going to school without masks. So they're trying to determine that risk. Okay, so they decide to focus on the North Carolina school district. I don't know if they were from North Carolina. I don't know. So they published this article supposedly analyzing all this stuff. And from what Ben Shapiro said, they say right in their article, well, you know, we do have the statistics for how many children actually got sick. And so, you know, it's possible that the masks help because we really don't have a control group. So we didn't know how many would have gotten sick if they didn't have the mask. Okay, well, first of all, you're dead. You're done. You're done. If you're trying to draw conclusions about how risky it is and you don't have a control group, you're done. You shouldn't even. So they said, well, so what we decided that we'd do is we would go over and look at other countries, you know, that didn't have a mask mandate and see how many infections were over there. So they go over to Israel. They pick, you know, some school in Israel that just had this widespread breakout where 150 plus kids or something gets. But the problem is, from what Ben Shapiro was saying, is that none of the schools in Israel were making kids wear masks to school. Instead of using the entire country as some sort of a control group, in this article, they just picked this one school. See, that's how bad it can get. That's how bad it can get if you don't have masks. But see, since in North Carolina, they were wore masks and they had less than that, well, then obviously, quote unquote, obviously, masks help. Okay, there are so many things wrong with that formulation. It's just not even close. And yet these are the kinds of articles that we're getting. And then if there are no statistics to prove anything, instead of trying to gather the statistics to prove one another, we just say, well, we don't have data on it, but we think this will help. So now we're just giving opinions on things. And there's such skew. I mean, you get stuff like, well, things have been doubled up. My UPS guy is here. I am going to go say hello. Well, rats, I actually shut that off, so I'm going to have to seam these two things together. That's fine, I'll do it. But the problem here is if you do that to your numbers and people get underneath your numbers and go, wait a minute, that's not right. Well, now all of a sudden you've destroyed trust and people aren't going to believe any kind of numbers that you put. And then the only recourse you have is that if people don't believe your numbers, then you have to point fingers at them and tell them, that's because you're a racist, or, you know, that's because you don't care about children. You know, then you get into all this name calling and accusations. Either you have to treat your numbers well, or you just descend into name calling. And I've never seen before, maybe I just wasn't paying that attention, but I have just never seen before how much of the numerical stuff that is being shoved around during this pandemic just seems completely suspect. You know, things like the CDC not giving any guidance, or the National Medical Establishment not giving any guidance as to how many cycles you're going to run on PCR tests. But then when it comes to counting breakthrough cases against vaccines, then it's specified. And it's specified much lower than anybody else has been doing it. You know, things like outright telling employers that they don't have to report side effects of vaccines to OSHA, because if you mandate vaccines and there's a side effect, that's a work claim, but you don't, because we don't want to discourage people from getting vaccines, just don't bother to report when there's a side effect. Oh man, you're just destroying so much belief in the system when you do that. So it's really astonishing to see the way all of this is going, and to see how little it seems like we can trust anymore any kind of numbers that are being thrown around. And for me, all of this just taps right back into this idea of abandoning a moral code, because in the process of abandoning the moral code, what you're really doing is abandoning any standard for truth. There's just nothing there anymore. And it isn't about what is true and what is factual. It's only about what emotional points can you score to get the upper hand on someone. And it's astonishing to me when we look at something like the Democratic presidential debates last year, and you've got one party that is making another party seem like they're racist. And then, well, Kamala Harris's takedown of Biden, I mean, she might as well just come out and tell him that you're racist and, you know, you would have rescinded this and blah, 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 blah. And then she's his vice president and someone asks her, so didn't you basically call him racist? And her shrug off response, followed by a cackle, was, well, that was a debate. So I'm just going to say whatever, quote anything, accuse anybody of anything, and then we're just going on, because it's post-truth. All that matters is the emotive content. And There's only one thing that comes out of all that, and that's destruction. Just complete and utter destruction. So, you know, it's all very fascinating, and I have got a lot of stuff to do tonight. So I'm going to wrap that up there. It's just going to be fascinating to see. I've got a friend in the hospital that I've got to check and see how he's doing. I've got another coworker who seems to be getting better. I've got another friend whose brother, they thought he was getting better, and they transferred him down the ICU, and everything seemed to be fine, and then he just died, which I would guess it was a blood clot. So, there is beauty in everything. And one of the glorious things about this life is that we go see Jesus after it. But it is, wow. Wow, we just really, really need to get back to a moral code. Because this is not good. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.